of the talk this evening is What Men Really Want. And we could spend probably, it could be a good forum topic sometime, and just allow you to share what you think men really want, but that's not what I want to do here tonight. Tonight, it basically comes from an article, an interview that Keith Thompson gave Robert Bly in the New Age magazine back in 1982. And Robert Bly is a poet who lives up in northern Minnesota on a small farm. He is probably one of the more prolific poets, translators around. And what he's about currently is trying to understand the male person and taking a look at some ancient fairy tales and trying to understand who the male is supposed to be as far as some of our ancient myths. And what I'd like to do for about the next 30 minutes, 35 minutes, is to lay out basically what Robert Bly has to say, including telling a fairy tale that he kind of wove in and out of his interview called The Iron Man. It's from the Grimm Brothers collection, written about in, I think it's 1890. And what these are up here are just some terms from that fairy tale that you may want to refer to later in our discussion. First of all, Bly starts off talking about the male has gone through a considerable amount of change in the last 30 years. In the 1950s, they were hardworking, responsible, disciplined. They didn't see women's souls very well, but they looked at their bodies a lot. He says he calls it the Reagan mentality. They were vulnerable to the collective opinion. They all had to like football games, had to be aggressive, had to be American. You could never cry, but always had to provide. That was the motto. They lacked feminine space. They lacked some sense of flow. They lacked compassion. And he says this led to Vietnam. It led to our problems, he still thinks, in Central America today. They had a clear vision of what a man was supposed to be, but it was inadequate. And it was all centered around what society thought a man should be, and the man said, okay, I will be what society wants me to be. Then comes the 60s and into the 70s, and with the Vietnam War and that anguish, it made males question what we really are all about. And the women's movement encouraged the male to actually look at women for a change. And when we looked at women, we saw, he says, our own feminine side. And we paid attention to it. We became more thoughtful. We became more gentle. But we did not become more free. We are nice guys who now pleases not only mother, but also the woman that we are living with. He calls it, and other people have called it, the soft male. A lovely, valuable person who's not interested in harming the earth or starting wars or working for corporations. But something is wrong. This person is very unhappy. There's not much energy in this person. This person is life-preserving, but not life-giving. He is able to take what life is around there and preserve it, but Bly is seeing that we as males do not really add to and engage and energize life very much. We ran from looking and appearing to be machos So we did everything we could to not have the macho look. And with that comes the whole unisex things, and there's all sorts of parallels, and I don't want to go into that, of how this parallels, because I don't know anything about it, the feminist movement, and now what is being called the males liberation movement, or many other names. The new strong woman wanted, according to Bly, a soft man. How many of you remember seeing the bumper stickers? Women say yes to men who say no. Any of you ever see those? Yeah. Women say yes to men who say no became somewhat the ideal of what a man is supposed to be all about, according to Bly here. They had learned to be receptive, and it wasn't enough to carry the marriages, Bly says. In every relationship, there needs to be something fierce once in a while. The man was schooled to say, I feel your pain, I consider your life as important to mine, but the male could not say what he wanted and stick by it. So moving beyond the soft male, Bly tells this following story. In 1820, I thought that was a little late, 1820 story called Iron John, which actually could have happened, he said, thousands and thousands of years ago. It appears in this wilderness, and next to the wilderness, there is this kingdom, and hunters go from the kingdom into the wilderness, into the forest, only to never come back. Soon, they learn that it might not be a good idea to go into the forest, into the wilderness. And so for many years, nobody went, until a new hunter came to town, and this hunter asked, is there anything I can do to help your kingdom? And the king said, well, you could go into this forest and find out why hunters don't come back. And he said, I will. And he didn't bring a bunch of people with him, only his dog. And off they went into this forest. And when they got to a swamp a little larger than this hearth, up out of the swamp comes a hairy, huge hand and grabs the dog and brings the dog back into the swamp. Now the man did not become hysterical, but very deliberately decides to go back to the village and gather up some other men, and they bring buckets back to the swamp to drain the swamp. Bucket after bucket after bucket. You get the hint? After bucket. Once they get all the muck out, what's left is a huge, hairy man, hair from the top of his head down to his feet, with kind of a rusty looking features. I mean, he was probably in this water for a long time. They capture him and they bring him back to the village and put him in the courtyard in the center of town in a cage, so that people, and in this case, primarily young males, can look at the hairy man. And one day, the king's son, who loves to play with his golden ball, is rolling it around the courtyard, and it rolls into the cage.
And the hairy man
picks the ball up and holds it
And the boy kind of stares and wonders what to do. He asks, "I want my ball back." And the hairy man says, "You unlock this cage, and I will give you your golden ball back." It kind of scared him a bit, so he went off to other things, and he comes back. It's three basic times that he comes back. And at the third time, the king's son says, "I don't even know where the key is." And the hairy man says, "The key is under your mother's pillow." And the boy walks over, and it's not by coincidence that the king and the queen happen to be out of the village that weekend. And the boy takes the key from out of the pillow, comes over, unlocks the cage, lets the wild man, the hairy man, the iron man, whoever you want to call him, out of the cage. And the hairy man starts going back to the wilderness. And the prince says, "Stop. My mother and my father won't like what I have done. I can no longer stay here." And the wild man says, "You're right," and takes him up on his shoulders, and they go off into the wilderness, into the forest together. So ends the story. Now, before I kind of tell you what Robert Bly says this story is all about, knowing the brief introduction that I told you about what he feels about the 50s, 60s, and 70s males, can we have a little bit of a discussion here on what you think this story is all about, especially in relationship to the talk that the title of our talk tonight, "What Men Really Want." Have any of you heard that story before?
Yeah, as soon as you said that he was in the cage, I think I've even seen it acted out.
Hmm. Did I leave anything out?
The golden ball will enter the cage. Yeah.
Okay. And you saw it too, or you read it too?
I've heard of longer ending.
Oh. Yeah, so have I. That's what I'm curious too.
There was a whole spiel that happened after that.
Okay.
I can't remember well enough.
Okay. The two of you or anybody else, what does it have to do with males? And do you know, and you know, what does the swamp represent? I probably should put that up here. What does the swamp represent? What do you think hair represents? What's the courtyard?
I haven't thought a lot about what the 50s although they seem to be a breaking down between feminine and
I know that the hairy man didn't speak before he spoke to the boy. And when he spoke with so much intelligence. It's what wooed the boy in doing everything he did. Also, he was captivated by this hairy monster that was more intelligent than anyone else he'd ever heard.
Oh, good. That wasn't in the interview.
That's what led him to go with you, too. Yeah. I don't want to face my parents because they won't understand. And you must have an understanding more than they do, and I want to go with you.
Uh-huh. Anybody else want to say anything about the story, what they thought of or... I don't understand that either. That's the same thing. I said, "What happened to this poor dog? Did they ever find it? It's still there." I mean, you know how stories go. You know, they didn't have all these editors picking those things up. They didn't mention the
hairy monster.
Pardon?
They wouldn't have found the hairy man.
Right. And the dog was a close relationship to the hunter, and that's why. Otherwise, if he just grabbed his shoe, he probably would have just walked down and said, "Forget this," you know.
Perhaps
The
hair covered up who he actually is. He's covering up like a cloak.
Mm-hmm.
I think the wildness has the feature of the man, and said when you were describing blind caricature and characterization of a male in the last decade, that there's a certain fierceness perhaps with the using from relationships and
mm-hmm.
And I think that this blind man represents that, that self that you want to touch with from the blind.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the other images, such as the key, which is blind man, your mother's pillow, you have to feel connected with how you let out this unpainted.
Any of you ever felt like you were somewhat under the influence of your parents or your mother or your father and that caused some sort of conflict in who you are? Right, right.
But he doesn't sound a bit fierce when he talks nice with his boy and comes out of the cage, and I don't know whether he gets the ball back or not. I mean, that's a lot of depend on that in my mind. But he puts the kid on his shoulders and talks nicely and then he won't wait for him.
Right. But the appearance before that happens is this incredible scary person. This huge beast of a person that you've never even seen anything as
Sasquatch.
Yeah. But the reality is that once it gets done, you know, he is a very supposedly nice, you know, character in that sense. Not in nice in the way we've been talking, maybe. Good, but
it seems to me that the
soul
ball is something that leads to the it's an attraction that leads to something deeper or something more meaningful, because it seems that at the end, when the boy opens the cage, the golden ball really becomes a secondary importance to the boy, and the relationship with the hairy man becomes far more important.
Mm-hmm. 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 Now let me just share briefly what the significance Bly gives to some of these terms up here, and see then if this at all makes sense. And there's been a lot of people who have really looked at a whole host of mythologies to try to put some of this stuff together. The hair, lots of hair, usually is the instinctive, the sexual, the very primitive character of a person. And I might even start with the swamp. Anything below the surface is unconscious. And it's been down there deep in the bottom, so it's way down in the unconscious self. And what's down there is usually something that people don't like to deal with, and it's been down there for a very, very, very long time. And the buckets is not, you don't look for somebody else to come with some big giant, and it's all taken care of. It's a very disciplined, deliberate digging down. And clearing out to even to get to see this monster, this wild man. And the boy, I don't think I said this in the story, was about 8 years old. And 8 years old is usually sometime in the grade school period is where children lose their innocence. And it's usually completed by high school. Once again, a la Bly. And the golden ball, gold usually symbolizes light, and the ball is the spherical wholeness, completeness. And so what puts this together, it's the unity of the personality one has as a child, which is lost. It rolls into this cage somehow, and what you have to do is get it back. And the courtyard, by the way, is just civilization. That when you enter civilization, you lose your innocence. And how do you regain it? And just the wild man being transferred into civilization to allow us to look at the wild man. There's been lots of writing being done on how corporations, and probably the church for that matter, has tried not to allow us to get in touch with lots of those things. And we have to discipline ourselves in other ways. Another one, but yeah. Oh, Well, the key, I think, is fairly obvious. The key could be literally literally the key that unlocks so that wild man can come out, but it also could symbolize, you know, to be free, you have that the key is your mother's bed. The key is that you have to somehow, and this fits in some ways, I don't know if Barb's here, the gospel text for tomorrow, those of you who are in text study earlier today, the key is to try to get away from the sphere of influence, the force field of your parents, in order to find yourself. One example of that, another tradition, is the Hopis in the Southwest. When the boy reaches the age of 12, the boy has to go down into the kiva. The kiva is kind of their sanctuary, and you literally have to enter it from the roof and descend a ladder. And for, I think it is 6 days, he is told this male story without father or mother present. And then if they're kosher Hopis, which you stay away from your mother for a year and a half. And you stay almost totally away from female influence to try to connect with your male. Bly talks about from the Industrial Revolution on, there's a whole new way of males relating to males. That before males could learn about their father and what the father did by going to the mines, being with the farm, and because kids learn not by intellect, but by example, or by doing, or by seeing, versus by being told. And so what happens now when all of us go to our offices? What happens is that the child can no longer experientially understand who father is, except for via what father tells you or what mother tells you about what father is. And you could work the same with mothers, but narrowing the topic down here. And with that in mind, Bly says that the problem is, since the Industrial Revolution, is that males have grown suspicious of males. Because, and I know, you can tell, I wrote down some things that I remember my mother used to say to me about my dad, because I didn't know what my dad did. You know, he works hard, he loves you, he's tired. Do your work so he won't have to. Those were the tapes that I heard growing up. He loves me, but why isn't he here? He works hard. Okay, what is he doing? The problem comes is that we somehow, and he lays this out on dealing with the CIA and Watergate and all these other sorts of things, that somehow we don't trust our father anymore. Because no matter what we think, mothers and fathers play off each other for their child's attention. And they give maybe distorted viewpoints of the other person. And so it's not the female's problem, it's the male's problem, that the male wasn't doing it, you know, himself. And the problem comes is that the boy starts to dislike and hate or resent in some sort of way his father. And for that sake, a lot of ways, mother, and Bly even tells a funny story. Do any of you have any teenage sons who kind of hulk around the kitchen, you know, and you wonder why they're so just, you know, uptight and just you know, you just want them to be nice people.
they're somehow trying to get in touch with what Bly says is that's that male energy. That they've been schooled to just to be nice, just to be sweet, to have nice manners, and all these sorts of things.
How would you respond to this myth having come from a patriarchal time? And what Bly's really worried about is the loss of male dominance. And he's just about had it up to here with feminism. And he's sick and tired of men sitting down negotiating with their wives' child care. My wife's got him, I've got him over here. We figured that out before he came in. The man just says, look, you take care of the kids. I'm going into the session. Mm-hmm. Now, how would you respond to it? And I don't care who came up with the myth.
Yeah.
Maybe it came from a patriarchal time when men called all the shots. And what men really want, you know, they want dominance again. They want to run. So this is just a bunch of malarkey.
Okay.
Even if it came from Minnesota boy. Maybe because it came from a Minnesota boy. It's a bunch of malarkey.
I wonder what he thinks of Garrison. Yeah, do you want to?
Well, I don't know how many of you have read the novel Wuthering Heights. The novel Wuthering Heights, there is a very a masculine man, and then there's the intellect man. And this lady falls in love with both of them. She ends up with the intellectual one rather than the one that she really yearns for because she knows it'll be better for her. And simplifying the book. But there, I think women have that same problem. They want that nice man that's understanding. What they really want is the other. They think they. Women don't know what they want either.
That could be true.
But I don't know if men know what they want. There's too much.
Don't be nice now, Darius. Take this back.
What we're about here is not about what women want.
I know.
It's about what males want. And the problem is precisely that point, that all too often males think that to say, I'm going to go in here, is being macho. And they can't not allowed to be macho anymore. We have to be soft. We have to be gentle. And what, if any of you know anything about how the psyche is supposed to be drawn according to at least Jung, and this is kind of my drawing, you have the conscious self and the unconscious self. And I've always said before I read this, and I read this coming out here, so I'm struggling with it. I don't know. You know, I'm into the soft male routine myself. But that the feminine was always the what you showed the inner world, and this is your persona on the outside, which you wanted to show the outer world, which is the maleness for males, and this is the femaleness. What Bly, I think, is trying to say is that if you go deeper, what you find is not the feminine, but the deep male. And the feminine is kind of the feminine side of ourselves is really really somewhere in here, which we have to get in touch with. I love to write and read poetry. I love to do all these other things that the feminists have told me it's okay to do. But they have told me, and what I've learned anything from the feminist movement, is that they're starting to tell themselves who they are. And males are still dealing with who we are in relationship to other people. How many of you males have ever gotten together and talked about who you are as male? Okay. How many of you women have gotten together to talk about? I mean, why? Why is that? I think that men need to, I want to be gentle. Men need to claim their turf.
Then why are so many of them beating up their wives? I mean, this crap about men aren't, there's no fierceness coming out of them. I want to know why all these men are beating up their wives.
Because they're not getting in touch. They're not getting in touch with the wild men.
Why are they sexually abusing their daughters?
Because they're
their sons.
Because they're suppressing all this.
So there's a certain way for the fierceness to come out then. Well, it's not just enough that he fears.
Oh, heavens, no.
So what is the recommendation?
Well, is fierce the word that you're looking for? I mean, you were talking before, wild, and I don't know what wild means. Wild may not mean fierce, does it?
What does it mean? What you're
well,
making
heard,
a decision.
Robert
and by the way, the theme for this summer up here is gentle justice too, and I wonder how those two play together. We might want to get some of that in there too. Do you want to make a...
I'm more just the question, because I don't know the answer, but I'm not so sure that wild necessarily means fierce.
Okay.
I mean, it may be something that, I mean, I don't know that wild is anything more than not understood, and that doesn't shed any light, I'm sure, on the question, but I don't know if fierce is the right answer. Is the right
wild as opposed to the
okay.
Okay.
I have a really frustrating experience of seeing my brother.
Speak louder.
There was a black student staying in my house from Tanzania, and I've never had to relate to a black person before a black person from Tanzania. And I was caught between being so paranoid about how prejudiced I was to react. That I found myself caught between first being too nice and looking for the truth, and then being so mad at myself because I was being too nice and going out of my way when I had other things to do, that I get angry and I'd be too rude.
See, and the point there, and the point there, which is, I don't know about a female problem, but it's definitely, I think, a male problem, is forceful action. It's not group, it's not, as I'm understanding it, it's not brute strength. It's forceful action with some sort of resolve that I know who I am and what I'm all about. When you don't know who you are and what you're all about, it's when you have to have some sort of brute strength to prove that you are something else than who you are. And that's where the domestic violence happens. That's where wars happen. That's where, you know, all this other stuff happens, I think.
Will the wild man compromise?
Yes? Oh, go on.
Well, I mean, a lot of them. I still think about defining wilderness from an ecological standpoint. One, when they talk about deep ecology, they see wilderness as something we learn to interact with instead of something we have to conquer or be afraid of, which is how we always approach it. And if we look at the wild part of ourselves the same way, it's not necessarily something that's going to make us a big ogre that's going to beat people up, but we're still willing to compromise, but we're also willing to stand up for ourselves. And that's something I hear women and men talking about. Mm-hmm. I think the fly gets in trouble for it as soon as it's a male fit.
Okay. I don't know if he's assuming that, but what he's saying is for men to take a look at it, we have to proclaim it as male. Whether or not women own it as well or not is another story. I don't know if he would say this is only a male thing, and then I would take issue with him too. And I don't know if you heard him or...
That's been my frustration reading him. And a lot of people do. And I think he lives in a specific community of people. I think there are a lot fewer soft males than percentage-wise in our culture than there are in the community that Bly thought about.
But how about Holt?
It's probably the same way, similar community.
Yeah, that's why I thought it might be healthier here.
Well, his Keep Other Naked Land, where he elaborates the female, there is a violent female, too. So he sees that in the female experience.
in a whole other talk, but I think it will fit here, I've used an illustration of somebody who doesn't know how to swim in a swimming pool and wanting to impress people sits on a beach ball and looks, everybody's noticing now that I'm swimming. And at the worst possible time, the beach ball pops out from under me and pops up and everybody sees it. You know, once in the water, the unconscious, the conscious stuff. And the point is not to use all that energy to keep it hidden, but to play, to deal with in a conscious way as much as one can with the beach ball. And when you want to throw it off to the side or when you want to use it. And the same thing is I think the domestic violence stuff is people trying to control and hold in so much of their inner self that there's some real harm that comes from that.
What frees up men to talk about that stuff? Among themselves.
Beer.
Beer.
Yeah. Go down to the tavern. There, that's all the men are. Drinking. Yeah.
How many of us have talked about close, intimate things with other women, us who are males? Yeah. And how many of us have done the same sort of thing with men? Okay, about the same. But yeah, I would have thought that, but I guess it doesn't hold true. I've hold it. Yeah.
I think one of the things you brought up before, why it's difficult for men, the suspicion issue. I think it's more difficult for us to trust each other than it seems to be for women. And it seems to be for me. I naturally find myself trusting women in certain issues that I want to share more than men. I'm not sure where that comes from. You know, if it's a familial thing or a cultural thing. But it takes me a lot longer to get to a certain place with a man in general. And I have done that.
You don't want to be vulnerable.
Pardon?
You don't want to be vulnerable.
Vulnerable.
And by opening yourself up and sharing, you know, there you are. You're vulnerable.
By unlocking the cage, you don't know what's going to come out and how that wild man's going to deal and react.
Why don't men trust other men?
I find why do men feel vulnerable? Why do they not cooperate? Why are men naturally more competitive?
Maybe, you know, let me just try an experiment here. When men speak, can we say, why don't I feel more this and why I don't feel more this? And then try to answer it. And if women, because we're on the spot here tonight as men, maybe you can ask men that. And later we might swap. But did you have a comment?
Yeah, I find part of the problem for myself in relating to other men is that men don't work at understanding others as well. I think that as talking to another man, I don't think quite often another man can relate to me, because sometimes maybe it's because we're talking to ourselves and saying, gee, he's got hang-ups. I wonder if any of those hang-ups are mine. And we block it out. And another problem I find is the homosexual problem is, oh, you know, if I come in front of this guy, he's going to think I'm a fag. You know, we're torn between being sensitive to others, but not showing that things hurt us.
A little louder.
I have a bigger time listening to men, because if I live with a man and I get his approval, I can just get communicated by hearing the man as a man. But if I live with a woman and I get his approval, my role model is, you know, it's a lot more heavy, but my role model is approval. And what is that looking at my identity? Whether it's a woman or a man.
Okay.
Before I call it, I just want to practice a little bit of what I'm preaching here. Normally, I would just go on and on and on, but I did not like the reference to gay men as they.
The reason I said setbacks is because I meant it when I said it as a derogatory term, because a lot of times when we're afraid of being homosexual, we look at it in a derogatory term. I in no way think of homosexuals as fags or fags. Okay. I think of them as people who practice homosexuality. Okay.
Being this way is hard. Any other comments on that? I would not. Yes. Anybody else want to?
I think I have been taught that way, not to be it.
How much relates to the discussion of the function of the male society, where feeling gets in the way of doing the job, it's just to see that.
I was interested, the reason that we don't trust each other as men is because we're taught that through not knowing what our fathers are, what our fathers do. I grew up differently from that. I grew up in a very small town, and my father had the hardware store, and every day I came to lunch, and I got to spend hours on the hardware store, talking to customers and being patted on the head.
So he actually taught you the craft, huh?
Yes. But I grew up knowing a man who was very old and very quiet. And I saw men who talked about hunting and fishing and pump parts. But I couldn't see men that talked about feelings unless their feelings were about poultry that is happening. We never dealt with each other on those kinds of levels. So I came in one day with a big shiner, and I remember meeting him at baseball, and I was told that boy, that was really pretty neat, because I was tough. But nobody cared whether, a little boy had been hurt. And I suppose that's what I was taught, was she says that for synthesis, male friends have trouble expressing themselves sometimes. Well, I think maybe that's why.
I don't think men are taught to suppress their pains, their worries, and their fears exclusively by other men. I think mothers help boys be brave, be strong. It's the whole society that tends to do that.
And I would also include fathers in that.
Oh, yeah.
I'll never forget. I came back from having four teeth pulled from a dentist once for braces, and the blood had to stop and was just, you know, blooding up. And I came walking, and I took probably the longest way home ever because I wanted to bump into everybody I could possibly see to tell them I was in the fight. And somebody pulled my teeth. Yeah.
I was wondering if, I did have two comments to make. One is, I think, the comment about Bly speaking to a very exclusive or elitist bunch of men is true. I think we have more machoism today than we used to. I think the so-called soft man is perfectly interesting. But my second thing is that I was just wondering if, when we grow up, we need to separate from our parents. And perhaps the women can respond to this too, is that when I grow up, I need to separate from father and mother, who I see as very powerful influence on my life, and by the way, I'm still working on it. So I wonder if, in a way, by the man being absent for the woman, if it wasn't somehow easier to focus on separation. And I mean, the man was absent from my life, but still he was a man. And I needed to first identify him and separate him individually. And the mother was there. I needed to work on that too.
Mm-hmm.
And so I felt, in a way, a double whammy there, a lot of work. And I was, you know, always my feelings to express and do that.
Bly's 55 years old, or 58 years old now, but he says that he grew up feeling, or when he started to get into this, that he was deprived of his father. And then he realized that his father also was deprived, and it helped him get in touch, reconnect with his father in that sense. And my dad died about 7-8 years ago now, and I'm closer to him now in his death than I ever was in life. It is sad, but it's almost safer now to deal with some of that stuff and make up my own endings. You know, how would my dad deal with me now, rather than he confronting me or me confronting him when he was alive? It can apocryphalize a lot of that. Yeah.
Kind of interesting talking about this, because just before I came to Holden, a good friend of mine went off with Bly, and it was 6 days down in Mendocino County, 90 men, and Robert Bly.
Mm-hmm.
He just got back, I haven't talked to him in a while, but so it was pretty intense.
How much would this conversation be different if the women were here, do you think? How would it be different? Chris, do you want to tell me how it would be different if you weren't here? Anybody want to say how many men think this conversation would have gone a little differently or a lot differently if the women weren't here? How many of you think it would have been basically the way it's going now? Okay. Any reasons why you think one way or the other? I'm just kind of curious.
Why don't we just leave and find out?
I'm interested. My wife has said it would be much different. I want to know when she was in the group of male group to find out how.
She bought the tape afterwards.
Another interesting comment is that if it was flip-flopping, we were talking about women, that it would probably be mostly women.
they're finding out they have classes now on men in more colleges. And there are more women taking that class, and the men are taking that school because they want to meet the women that are taking that class. They're not going to find out more about themselves.
What's the title of the course?
There's Manhood and Getting to Know Yourself. I'll title something like yours. They're very popular classes now in colleges.
For females?
No, for females. But females, just like we want to know. We want to understand the men.
Because men don't tell you very much. Yeah. All I could, and some of you, you know, Bly says that it's not the shallow or macho or snowmobile man. For those of you who are so weird, that's Bly's point. He's northern Minnesota, remember. Okay. The deep masculine does not mean the person with brute strength, but as I said before, the forceful action, not without compassion, but with resolve. You're not held by another person. It's not, you don't look to another. You don't find a guru. But the wild man seeks, or the person who's in touch with the wild man, and you know, all that story was about the same person. In that sense, it's kind of like dreams in a way. Everybody's yourself in it. That's one way of looking at it. But the wild man, when you get in touch with the wild man, what was I saying?
What's your definition of wild man?
Oh yeah, that it has to come from within oneself. And the problem, and I wouldn't, being Darius and not Bly, I would not say that's the only place. But the problem with males is that males have been looking for who they are out there for too long, and they have to discover who they are within themselves. And why they don't do that is that they're scared of the wild man, who is really an intelligent, articulate, caring, sensitive, but forceful person. Now, anybody else have any other ideas?
I don't know that when men watch TV, do they identify with any of the characters as someone that is the man that they would like to be, or the man that they think is a real man?
Quarterback to follow his own signal.
Spencer for hire to me is the perfect man. I mean, he's strong and he's virile and knows poetry and good looking
and we'll do an additional.
He cooks. Yeah, that Spencer for hire is a good one. Yeah.
But being a quarterback and calling your own shot, that's probably the definition of a man.
Most quarterbacks don't call it a coach.
And if you as males are at all as honest about this as I think I am, you might come up with a similar conclusion as I am, in that I'm not dealing with the wild man very well. And I can't put words what a wild man is. I can put Bly's to it, but when I try to get in touch with it, I want to put Bly's words to it and not my words. I want to put it out there. It is still scary for me to think that I can claim who I am. And there's a lot of me I claim, but it's claiming in a lot of external ways. And it's real scary. Yeah, a couple of new people here.
In the history, kind of think of the hairy man in the history. And the gun bell is, well, thank you, but the prophet, often, well, we can take it as a hairy man. The grand theft and battery comes out. Yeah. And out in the wilderness, you know, like up through the 3 years or two of it, one of the things. Jeremiah's reacted hairy, he wasn't.
in there.
But just, you know, I saw a lot in the gospel for tomorrow too about the two men or the two. Oh, how did that text go? Who was there? There, you had to, you couldn't go home. If you were going to follow me, you had to just, you couldn't even go home for an hour to grieve somebody's death and all that. You had to follow. There's the man, all too often needs to go back to get permission. Go back somewhere to get permission to do what they want to do.
Well, if you have joint responsibilities, then you better go home and get permission. Or you're a jerk. Well, you know, I think it's despite on the time of irrelevant, but I think that men tend to have safety in building things or have safety in more industrial type of things, and that's how we have traditionally expressed ourselves. I know I feel very safe planning to build something or, you know, some sort of structure. It's much easier for me to deal with that. And it ties in with the home thing, I think, more that, you know, the place to be, a place that I, this is a fortress, that kind of attitude, you know, more than letting things be a little bit.
Because you are in control of that. You know how it's
going to
go.
You're in control, absolutely. You know,
last comment up here.
I wonder what it means. I'm a pastor, so I stand before a lot of couples getting married, and I usually use the Genesis passage, and I wonder what it means. Therefore, shall a man flee his father and mother and be joined to his wife? What does that mean? Is the woman not leaving father and mother? Has the woman already left father and mother? Is the man being helped?
Definitely the latter. I don't know about the former. Go in peace.